La 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 la. Inspired by true events, the greatest podcast to be broadcast into your brain.
Welcome, welcome. This is Inspired by Movies, the podcast where we talk about movies and the real stories that inspired them. My name is MK. My pronouns are they, them.
My name is Courtney, or Cake, or Pancake. My pronouns are she, them.
My name is Emily, and my pronouns are she, her.
Hell yeah. How's everyone doing today?
It's a good day. It's a beautiful day outside.
It's really nice. It's a good day. Yeah. It's always a fun time to be with you guys.
So. Yeah. I know. Sundays. It's the Lord's Day.
It's the Lord's Day. Yeah. I learned where the phrase "use your noodle" came from the other day at work.
Where?
Noodle. I was standing there and I was just like, not really thinking about anything, but all of a sudden I was like, does anybody, this is kind of asking people around me, I was like, does anybody know where the phrase "use your noodle" came from? And then John immediately was just like, because your brains look like noodles. I was like,
duh.
What? And I was like, that is a really logical answer.
Yeah, it is.
Today, we are going to be talking about the movie Black Klansman. It's a 2018 movie about a African-American police officer from Colorado Springs who successfully manages to infiltrate the KKK. It's starring John David Washington as Ron Stallworth, Adam Driver as Flip Zimmerman, Laura Harrier as Patricia Dumas, Topher Grace as David Duke, Alec Baldwin as Dr. Ken Brew Beauregard, Ryan Eggold as Walter, and Jasper Pakkanen as Felix.
All right, so brief history of the Ku Klux Klan. First things first, my sources. I have quite a bit. All right, we have history.com, we have nationalgeographic.org, womenshistory.org, which is where I learned some more information about the amendments, excellentrap.wordpress.com, and Wikipedia. Nice. There you go. The KKK was, is, and always will be an organization of domestic terrorists. I think that we can all agree on that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just want to make that statement.
Yeah, just start right off the bat.
Yep. Mm-hmm. At the end of the Civil War in 1865, two amendments were added to the Constitution in the following years. 13th Amendment outlawed slavery, granting freedom to former enslaved people. The 14th Amendment, passed in 1868, granted citizenship to anyone born in the U.S., including former enslaved people, forbidding any state to deny or take away a citizen's right to life, liberty, or property. This amendment also gave voting rights to male citizens over the age of 21. In 1870, this amendment was confirmed to also include any male citizens of the U.S. regardless of race, affirming the right to vote to former enslaved male citizens. The addition of these amendments, among others, including the 15th Amendment, giving women the right to vote as well, to the Constitution, were part of what was called the Years of Reconstruction. During this time, voters of color, formerly enslaved men, were making big changes in the South. The Republican Party, which was much, much, much different than the Republican Party of today, mm-hmm. was popularized and became the majority legislation in the state of Mississippi. During this time, Hiram Rhodes Revels became the first American of color to be part of the United States Senate. South Carolina, in 1870, then elected African-American Joseph Rainey to the United States of the House of Representatives. The KKK was founded in 1865, at the end of the Civil War, by a group comprising mostly, surprise, surprise, of former Confederate soldiers and supporters as a, quote, heavy quotes, social club. As they like to call themselves, the Invisible Empire of the South. The first two words of the KKK are supposed to have come from the Greek word kyklos, which I talked to a Greek man about pronouncing, and he wanted to know why I was talking to him about the Ku Klux Klan. But key close means circle, and then the bastardization of the word clan, the clan with a K, is just, they wanted it to look like the other words. I couldn't find anything anywhere where it was just like, why they chose key close. It means circle, but I don't know anything beyond that.
Maybe it's something to do with K.
Yeah.
So it was key close clan?
Yeah.
Or that's where it started?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like the origin of it.
Weird.
And so they chose that name to solidify themselves as an organized group. In 1867, several local groups came together and named Nathan Bedford Forrest as the first, quote-unquote, Grand Wizard. Oh, it gets better. Don't worry, guys.
Wait, what year is this?
1867.
1867.
Okay. And he was, I pulled this a direct quote from history.com. He presided over a hierarchy of grand dragons, grand titans, and grand cyclopses.
What?
I don't know.
So what's like the ranking?
I don't know.
You got wizards, dragons.
One wizard.
To rule them all. And then I bet like Walter, because he is like the leader of that specific group. Maybe that he's a dragon. And then maybe like Felix is a titan. And then fucking Ivanhoe.
Fucking Ivanhoe.
I could not. You know what? We'll get to it. All right.
Ivanhoe is such a fucking cyclops. Like, it seems appropriate. I don't know what I mean by that, but he's a cyclops. Mm-hmm.
So. I feel like cyclops is probably for the newbies because, you know, one-eyed willies.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
Still
I'll give
learning.
You that.
Both of
that
your eyes
sense.
Haven't been opened yet.
Ooh, just one. Just one eye's been open.
Okay, Titans, Cyclops.
They fancied calling themselves a quote-unquote invisible empire of the South. During the time of Reconstruction after the Civil War, the rising popularity of the Republican Party due to the freedom and granted voting rights of former enslaved people gave this group of deplorable racists the confidence to terrorize black voters, office holders, and their families. Wildly violent groups of white people used methods of torture, sexual assault, and public lynchings, destruction of property, and even the schoolhouses of black children to intimidate families of color in their areas. Sorry, that was really hard to fucking look up.
Yeah, it's hard.
I was doing a lot of crying last night.
Yeah, like, it's just,
it's a lot, dude.
It's hard when you learn the truth. It's worse than you even thought that it was, and it's already so bad.
Yeah. In 1871, the Ku Klux Act was passed, and Ulysses S. Grant was permitted to establish martial law in areas where the KKK were most prevalent in order to break up these groups. Although he did not take full advantage of this opportunity, some state militias were able to break up KKK groups, including nine counties in South Carolina alone, resulting in thousands of arrests. While the Ku Klux Klan more or less evaporated as a national organization sometime during the 1870s, at the end of Reconstruction in 1877, Jim Crow laws were put into effect. These laws brought about rampant segregation and made black voting almost completely impossible in many states. Unfortunately and shamefully, Jim Crow laws would continue to be nationally upheld for almost a century until 1968, which I'm very disheartened to say is during not the second, but the third wave of the KKK resurgence. I have a little list. Events that brought about the second resurgence of the KKK, the 1905 book, The Klansman, by Thomas Dixon. People romanticized the contents of said book, which I didn't look it up, but I assume it was pretty fucking racist. The 1915 movie Birth of a Nation, depicting the Ku Klux Klan as unsung heroes during the Reconstruction. The 1917 immigration surge from Russia due to Bolshevik uprising bringing fear of communist rule. So those were three big events that kind of like brought about people's interest in the group again. This confluence of events brought new interest to the Ku Klux Klan and expanded their abhorrent hate from not just people of color, but to Jews, Roman Catholics, foreigners in general, and organized labor. It was during this resurgence that intimidation methods such as rallies, marches, and cross burnings were popularized among this group of domestic terrorists. During the Great Depression in the 1930s, the KKK members' numbers dwindled from their peak of almost 4 million nationwide in the 20s. Ugh. I know. Isn't that mind-boggling? To the point where the group was disbanded in 1944. During the beginning of the third resurgence of this vile organization in the 1960s, other means of destruction were being used in the South of the country to intimidate and kill minorities, such as bombings, this time adding homosexuals to their disgusting list of hate. The organization tried to be sneaky and carry out these crimes while hiding. All for naught. The country rallied against them and called for civil rights for all U.S. citizens, regardless of race, gender, or sexual orientation. As of 1965, after the arrest and public condemnation of four Klansmen in the murder of a white civil rights worker in Alabama by Lyndon B. Johnson, Klan activity slowed and violent acts became less common. I'm like, yeah, get him.
You hate the KKK.
No, and he's like, fuck racist. Since 1970, more extreme groups have cropped up as offshoots from the Ku Klux Klan, including the neo-Nazis and other extreme right-wing groups. In 2016, the Anti-Defamation League reported only 3,000 KKK members nationwide, while the Southern Poverty Law Center reported 6,000. Unfortunately, only a year later, groups of white supremacists would make themselves known in Charlottesville, Virginia, holding rallies and intimidating people, emboldened by our shameful excuse for a leader, Donald Trump. During a counter-protest, a right-wing neo-Nazi extremist would drive a car through a crowd and kill a woman, injuring many protesters. Events like these are still needlessly fueling hate now and dividing us all as people and as a country. And that is what I have to say about the KKK.
Thank you for that.
That's probably hard, yeah.
Thank you for going through that quick research so that we didn't have to look at those photos and things. Okay, so I picked this movie because seeing it in theaters shook me to the core. It was perfect timing for this movie to be released, having been about a year later after Charlottesville.
Wasn't it like exactly a year?
I think so, yeah.
I think that's kind of what, that is what like pushed Spike Lee to make the movie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No.
No?
Because those events happened in post-production. I mean, in like the editing. And then Spike Lee was like, no,
that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, but it came out when I was still waking up. I've been really ignorant all of my life up until the last few years that I've been trying to educate myself because the public school system doesn't like to cover things that make white kids uncomfortable.
Right.
And so I have tried to watch movies and listen to things that will help me understand privilege, my privilege.
Yeah.
It's movies like this that kind of open up your perspective.
There are plenty of people who will, they'll just be like, they'll go into watching this movie and then they'll realize how fucking intense it is, and they'll be like, nope, makes me uncomfortable, and they'll turn it off. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, if you can't watch something, like...
Yeah, exactly.
You like, can't ignore it.
Right? Yeah, like that one documentary, The Inconvenient Truth.
Uh-huh.
Oh man, that one's... It's... You've seen it.
It's a lot, yeah.
Oh, just the title. It's very inconvenient to learn about it.
Anyway, so yeah, this is a hard watch, but it's a much needed watch. It has a lot of good insight. Okay, so the movie starts with Gone with the Wind, and I wrote, how sad, they all died, sarcasm. Anyways, and then it pans to fictional Dr. Kenbrew Beauregard. He has a Confederate flag behind him. He's just saying all the racist shit and talking about white people's way of life being under attack and that everyone is trying to get everything segregated. Integrated. Opposite of segregation.
The idea is he's making a propaganda film, right?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, he's making a propaganda film, essentially, and it's so creepy because they're, like, cueing him on what to, like, say, mm-hmm. and he's, like, pumping himself up to be angry and, you know, mm-hmm. our holy white Protestant values, and that's genuinely how a lot of people still see movements towards progress, that they're going to take our lives, their livelihoods away and all that good stuff. And, you know, slurs and anti-Semitic stuff too. And,
I was worried that he was a real person because the shit that he was saying, I was just like, like, is this a real propaganda video? Like,
I'm sure there's something out there.
It sucks because it's just like, this character that Alec Baldwin plays is a fictionalized character, but he's based on someone. He's gotta be. There has to be people who...
Yeah. He embodies, like, all of their points of view, essentially. Yeah. And looking like a stand-up guy in a suit and talking about Christian values and shit to, like, make it sound okay.
Yeah.
Then, cut two! I love Spike Lee. This joint is based on some faux real shit. That's great. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ron Stallworth is walking into Colorado Springs Police Department to do an interview. They are asking him questions like, why didn't you go to Vietnam in the war? And he said he went to college and he has mixed feelings about it. They ask him a few parties. He says only on special occasions. And then what would you do if a cop called you the N-word? And he's like, well, would that happen? The guy's like, well, you're the Jackie Robinson of Colorado Springs.
But yeah, he's the first black police officer in Colorado Springs mm-hmm. in the 70s.
Chief Richards, he's like, I'll have your back, but I mean, there's only so much that I can do, you know.
They're like, it will happen.
Yeah.
So.
Good luck. Yeah. Don't come complaining to me. Right. Yeah. And then it cuts to him in his assignment, just pulling files and records, and everybody that comes in says that they want to pull a toad, which, do we know, is that like a racist slang or is that like a criminal slang?
That I wasn't sure and I meant to look it up.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna guess it. Yep, it's racist.
Great.
Oh, yep. What is it?
The name of the website is the Racial Slur Database.
Oh, great.
Very icky. But it says, in prison, a widely used term for black people. So, there you go. There's that.
Okay, the more you know, still learning. Yeah, that makes it even worse. Okay.
Yeah.
So, then he's walking to the chief's office, and he's saying that he wants to go undercover. He's like, what, like narcotics? Oh, Jesus. And he's like, well, wherever I'm gonna fit in. He's like, I'll trim up my hair or whatever. And the chief's like, no, I like it natural.
Yeah. For, like, an older white man, this chief is, like, pretty progressive in the way that, just, like, in his interview, he's just like, I'll have your back, you know, just so you know that. Or, you know, he's always trying to hear him out, mm-hmm. you know.
I think he recognizes the potential of having a black man mm-hmm. on the force mm-hmm. now.
Yeah, doesn't he say that? Like, we'll bring in more diversity.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then it cuts back to him pulling records. And I just put, asshole officer comes in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. What?
Because they don't actually say his name until, like, the end, basically. Mm-hmm. So you just know he's an asshole.
Landers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Landers. But at this point, you don't know who he is.
He's just an asshole.
He's just an asshole with a fucking cop mustache.
Yep.
Yeah, or like how they say in Orange is the New Black, a porn stash.
Mm-hmm. Porn stash.
And, you know, he comes in asking for another Toad record. And he's like, no Toad here. And so Landers ends up saying, I know you're thinking.
I love this.
He ends up saying, I know you think you're hot shit, but you ain't nothing but a cold fart. I can't with that line. Like, it's too much.
But anyways. Yeah, it's a good line.
Yeah, it's so stupid. It's like, it makes me think of, like, a kindergarten insult.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Especially since a grown man is saying it. Yeah. You're just like, that's the best it could come up with.
Grown man baby. Yeah.
Grown man baby.
Yeah, so.
And grown man baby.
And then he leaves, calling him Officer Toad. So cut to, a phone is ringing, and Ron wakes up, and he's called to go undercover in narcotics. He comes into the office, and they tell him that Stokely Carmichael, a black radical, used to be in the Black Panthers, and is, quote, considered the biggest internal threat to the U.S. And that is what, I guess, J. Edgar Hoover, who was in the FBI at the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's supposed to go and infiltrate the Black Student Union speech and basically monitor the audience reaction. So then they cut to wiring him up. I love it. They're just kind of like, okay, but what if someone hands you a joint? And his response, I'm high on love, peace, love, and soul.
I love how he was just like, what if someone hands you a marijuana cigarette? He's like, you mean a joint?
And they're like, well, what if somebody points a gun at you? And he says, peace, love, and soul. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then it pans to Ron walking up to the front of the line, and he's just like, hey, my sister. She's super beautiful, and he's kind of flirting, and
he's totally flirting.
Oh, God.
Totally. Like, I'm talking to the president.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, she is very much business right off the bat. She, mm-hmm. like, corrects him, like, excuse me, that's not his name. His name is Brother Kwame Ture. And she explains that he changed his name after he moved to Africa. He named himself Kwame Ture because he looked up to Kwame Nkrumah. I'm probably butchering that, so sorry, of Ghana, and his mentor, Sekou Touré of Guinea, which he ended up, in real life, he ends up actually moving back to Guinea, and that's where he ends up passing away.
Kwame Touré?
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. In real life, yeah.
That's awesome.
And, like, I didn't write that in my notes, but that was something that I read in my research.
Neat.
Okay, and then, you know, she reveals that, yeah, it's the Colorado College Black Student Union. She's the president. Ugh. So in the speech, they're, you know, talking about sticking it to the man. Stick it to the man, Neosis. Okay, so they're about to do the speech. Patrice is up there. Then Kwame gets up and he says that it's time to stop running away from being black. And to understand that they are growing intellectuals, you know, they're in college and they're going to change the world. They're going to change how society defines beauty. I noted that it's just showing these beautiful faces in the back. I don't know why I thought that was just, mm-hmm.
Well, just, I like to think that it shows just like how much, like how invested the audience was in, and just like all of the different individual faces of like the people in the audience listening to him. Mm-hmm.
And they could just all relate to what he was saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just showing them all as individuals instead of just a big group of people.
Mm-hmm. He says, we are black and are beautiful. So then he goes on to talk about how he loved the movie Tarzan and white Tarzan beats up the black natives, and he's cheering for Tarzan, saying to kill the beast. And he's like, that is like the Jews cheering on the Nazis. And he talks about not needing white saviors anymore, and that Black people are in these neighborhoods because of lack of resources, and people are just being shot down by white racist cops, and it's time for retribution.
There's a part in his speech where he's like, Black people are getting shot in the backs every day, and I was just like, thinking, you know, this movie set in the 70s, and so my mind was there. But then all of a sudden, my mind brought to the present because they are shooting them in the backs as they're trying to run away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he says, referring to Vietnam, he would rather you kill a racist cop than go to Vietnam and kill a Vietnamese person, because then it would actually be for a reason. Yeah, hell no, we won't go. A big theme is all power to all the people. Yes. Mm-hmm. Cut to...
During this speech, Ron Stallworth comes in and he's just like, I'm here to do a job. But as the speech is going, he's like, he's trying to be, you know, obviously chill, but he's getting that fire lit inside him that they're like asking him to try and diffuse, but he's just like, right on, you know?
Yeah, it was just like you could almost see he wanted to like really participate in the crowd because he's like quote unquote undercover, but also you can see in his face he's like, I agree with this shit. Yeah. This is really resonating with him and stuff. So
yeah, From what I was kind of reading from it was that he definitely was raised to act, quote, white and to, as he says, speak the king's English. Mm-hmm. And Kwame is talking about, like, yeah, no, like, you don't have to disguise yourself. Just be yourself. Be Black. And
there's no reason that you should feel that way.
Right. And that's how he acts. Mm-hmm. And that's how he was raised to act. And
yes.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
Right.
Because his dad was in the military. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's later on. He ends up saying, I speak the king's English. Mm-hmm. English and jive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he is in line to shake Kwame's hand, and he's like, do you really think there's going to be a war between Blacks and whites? And he just kind of leans in, and he's like, arm yourself, revolution is coming. Which really happened.
Really?
Yeah, that really happened.
Wow.
So after that, Ron is like trying to pick up Patrice and whatever, and she's like, well, you know what, if you want to meet up, let's go to this bar. So lo and behold, Patrice gets pulled over, and Kwame's in the car, and a couple other friends are in the car, and asshole cop shows up. He starts throwing slurs and then starts feeling at Patrice like they're being really tough with them for no reason. Well, they have a quote reason, but it's a ridiculous one. Anyways, so then she's like telling Ron the story, and he's like, wait, what? Did you get his name? And she can't remember. She's obviously traumatized, which adds just more fuel to her fire, rightfully, you know. And then I got really excited because they did the Soul Train dance line.
Yes.
Oh my god. I have to say that watching Soul Train was one of my favorites. Like, I was a dancer growing up, so it was some good dance action on Soul Train. Anyways, yeah, so, and the song, Too Late to Fall in Love.
Mm-hmm.
No, cut that, because I did it wrong. Too Late to Turn Back Now.
Oh.
Yep, did it wrong. Okay, so then he's given the recap in the chief's office. Ew, I spelled chief wrong.
I was having a hard time spelling it. My dyslexia was... really going for it with
Chief
that word.
Chief is a rough one. Yeah. Okay, so they're recapping in the chief's office, and he's like, the vibe was cool. And then he was like, wait, but they told you to prepare for war. And all three of the officers are like, yeah, no, I don't think that they were, like, actually meaning real war. Ron is being transferred to intelligence. Cut two. You see Ron sitting at a desk, he's not pulling records anymore, and he's reading the paper, and there's a fucking ad in the classifieds recruiting members to the KKK.
Just for the KKK.
Yeah.
They're just like, hey, interested? Give us a call.
Like, oh, yeah.
When they call, they're like, don't call it that. It's like, yeah, you've been out in the paper, idiot.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Like, doesn't it say, like, your local KKK chapter?
Right. Well, they're not super smart. Yeah, so he sees the ad in the paper, and there's a phone number. And it says to leave a message, and it ends with, "And God bless white America."
Oh, God.
He just leaves a message saying that he wants material. They immediately call him back, and they call it the organization. And they just ask him, you know, like, what's your story? And he makes up a story about his pure white sister. White.
By the snow.
By the driven snow.
And that she was supposedly raped or some sort of story like that. And then he's just throwing out all the slurs in the book.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And everybody's just like turning around real slow to look at him.
Yeah.
He just says all of it. Yeah, they're all just kind of watching him like, what the fuck, man? Like, who are you talking to? Because he's not telling anybody about it. He just decides to do it, and it, like, happens immediately. But then they're like, dude, you just gave him your real name.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, so then it cuts to him asking the chief if he can infiltrate the KKK.
You know, casual.
Yeah. And they're like, well, the chief, of course, is like, well, they'll know the difference between your voices. And he's like, well, how does a black man talk?
Right.
Can you explain that to me? Yeah, and that's when Ron's like, I speak both the King's English and jive. Yeah, I love that he's just purposely, like, making him uncomfortable. Yeah, so he explains that he has a contact over the phone, but he needs a white officer to play him. And then he gets
Flip Zimmerman.
Flip Zimmerman. Adam Driver.
I know, so great.
I love a guy with just a gigantic nose. I just
like a crooked
Adrian Brody. Fuck, man.
Yeah,
I love, like,
because I have one, and so it's always nice to be represented in Hollywood without being made fun of.
Like, Adam Driver also has, like, those big old ears. Like,
he's just a big goof. He's, like, he's so lurpy.
I just love goofy looking people. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Now it's, I understand why we're.
Stop. No, I love Adam Driver. Like, he, I mean, Kylo Ren.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a whitey baby.
Such a.
All right, let's so focus. They're gonna be a combined Ron Stallworth. In comes Adam Driver playing Flip Zimmerman. He says he's always wanted to be a black man because all of his ears were black. And then he talks about OJ.
Oh, yeah. When they, I keep forgetting, like, the time period. Because then they were like, and then OJ, and I was like, oh, ew. But he was a hero.
Yeah. He wasn't always a murderer.
Yeah.
So then he's like, well, you have to try and match my voice. And he's like, reading through these lines, just totally deadpan. And he's like, you want to be black? Now's your chance. Flip, just flow. And he's like, I'm flowing.
But yeah, that, like, whole exchange where he's like, what's buked? And he's like, disrespected. And Adam Driver's like, well, why did you just say that? Or like, Adam Driver's like, well, that's not grammatically correct, but whatever. You know, he's just like,
yeah, say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. I think he makes a comment about the Star of David necklace that he has on. He's like, wait, you're Jewish? And he turns around, I don't know, am I?
Ooh.
Sass.
Cut to Flip meeting with Felix instead of Walter, which is, like, kind of a little freaky. Ron is in the car, like, a ways away taking pictures. Felix insists that they drive his car to go to a different location. I put racist talk. Then he is scolded for calling it the Klan. It's the organization.
Yeah. And, like, right when they get in the truck, Felix is like, you for the right white race? And Flip's like, oh, hell yeah. It reminded me of Banana Bread at work. But yeah, lots of racist talk.
Like, whole lot. Yeah, so then he notices that there's somebody, like, following them. And he's like, reach under your seat, and there's a gun. And he's like, load it up. Anyways, that's kind of a little foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah.
That, yeah, these people are violent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then they show up to this bar with a big Confederate flag on it. They go inside. Walter's there, and he has this white power shirt on, and he's, like, talking about the Klan, and he says, I was shot and injured by black men, and now this has become my salvation.
This part where he is talking about, like, now you see him everywhere, and he's just like, they're selling your toothpaste, and it's, like, hitting. It's just, like, cutting, like, and I like it. And he's just like kind of tapping his pupil, and he's just like, you know, saying the N-word. Like,
he's tapping stressful. His what?
His pool cue.
Oh, okay.
Pule cue. Why can I say that?
I don't know. I didn't. Pool. I was like, what's he tapping?
I'm like, pupil? Pukle.
There's always one. You know what? Every fucking episode.
Well, at least now we know it was pukle.
Pule.
Pule.
Pule. Q.
Yeah. Pukle. It's a weird.
Yeah, pukle.
Pool.
Yeah, so he's like talking about.
See him everywhere.
Yeah, you see him everywhere. They're selling you, you know, toothpaste and deodorant and automobiles. And he's like tapping his pool cue on the ground. And just the tempo of that scene where it's like, it's all him, but it's like cutting to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, I don't know. I really liked it. I thought that was just the aesthetic of that scene.
Yeah, it was very well shot and edited.
It made it chaotic, which is what it was.
I was like, it's stressful, but very subtly stressful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, after that whole thing, guess who chimes this in?
Motherfucker.
Idiot asshole in fucking Itanya.
Walter Hauser. Yeah. The man we all love to hate.
Right?
And hate to love.
When I saw that, I did the same thing. I was like, oh my god. He is haunting me.
And he plays the same kind of dude. And it's also kind of funny, too, because in I, Tonya, he's like, counterterrorism. And in this movie, he's actually a terrorist.
Yeah, so.
Oh, and his name is Ivanhoe.
Fuck this guy.
Ivanhoe.
When I first noticed him, Courtney was like, he really just was good at playing just a fucking
piece of shit.
Bad.
People you love to hate.
Yeah, people you love to hate. I feel like he's made a career on that.
Yeah.
Now I want to, like, see. Maybe he's becoming one of my favorite actors.
No,
he's like,
typecast.
I'm like, I want to see what else he's in.
That's how I feel about Jeepers Creepers.
So then they start, so Ivanhoe, big boom, and it's going to be a big year for us.
Fireworks.
Yep. And then Walter's like, really quick, he's just like, the organization is strictly nonviolent.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really excited. Let's get you signed up for your membership. And he's like explaining the costs. And then he's like, and now you have to pay for the cloak and the hood. And Felix goes, fucking inflation. And then they're like, well, you're not a Jew, right? Because they killed Christ.
Well, Felix is like, comes up behind me. He's like, are you a Jew?
They're so afraid of Jewish people.
Yeah.
It's like, it has never made sense to me.
Do we know why they hate Jewish people? Like, what it is about?
Well,
because of Jesus?
Well, so, yeah, it was, I mean, just general, you know, why people,
not Christian,
like,
so you're evil.
Oh.
Yeah, and then there's the whole fucking, it's so gross. Jews control the money and the banks, and they're just, like,
Hollywood.
Trying to take over the fucking world, and
people think
that they're all just a bunch of, like, fucking pedophiles and stuff, and which is, guys, not fucking true. They're just people.
Yep.
And it's just like a different religion.
It's a different religion.
And it's like one of those religions that is actually, it's their way of life.
Yeah.
Like that's how they live their lives, you know?
The same way that like there's other religions that it's like is their way of life. It's how they live. But like I was saying in the history part where there was like an influx of migration or immigration to the U.S. in like 1917, specifically from Russia, because when the Bolsheviks took over, like with the USSR and everything, like you weren't allowed to publicly practice your religion. So a lot of the people who immigrated from Russia were Jewish people because it's their whole, it's their way of life. So you can't publicly practice religion under that that rule in Russia. So there was a big influx of immigration. So the KKK, like there was, like they fed off of that fear that these people immigrating from Russia were going to try and establish that like Bolshevik rule in America, which is what turned into the second resurgence of the Ku Klux Klan. Part of it. Yes.
Wow. Damn.
Okay. Anyway, sorry.
I'm enjoying
so
this.
Much. There's like so many aspects.
There's
to it.
So it's many layers. Gross. Yeah. It's like, damn. Anyways.
Okay. So yeah, they killed Christ. Well, anyways. So
sorry. Yeah. So yeah, he asks him, you know, are you Jewish? And
Flip turns around and you can see he hesitates, but he knows that he has to like step it up a notch and he hesitates and he's like, I know.
I like how, because I'm following along with IMDb, it says, Felix keeps suspecting that Flip might be Jewish, but Flip convinces Walter that he is just as racist as the rest of them. Like, well, yeah, that's how the scene went for sure.
Yeah.
How poor the real guy who did that, like the real Flip Zimmerman, because basically like trying to convince a bunch of racists that you're super racist.
Yeah.
That sounds like it would suck the life right out of me.
Yeah. And then cut to, they're reporting to Sarge, to the sergeant. And again, they're like, it sounds like they're all just talk. You know, it's like they're not actually going to do anything. And they could kind of just are like, whatever. But they're still going to do the investigation. Cut to Ron and Patrice out to eat. She keeps referring to pigs. He's like, I don't use the word pig. And she's like, what do you say instead? And he's like, I say cops, policemen. Then he's like, well, do you think all cops are racist? And then she's like, I'm sorry, are you a pig?
Yeah.
And she's like, excuse me, cop? And he's like, no. And he kind of skirts over the fact that he's in construction. And she's like, well, are you not for the empowerment of Black people? And that is just her passion for moving to making progress in society during that time is really inspiring. It cuts to Ron on the phone with Walter, and I put, Walter has a man crush.
He totally does.
He does. For real. He's like, oh, he just thinks this guy is the hottest shit, like so outspoken in his racism, you know. Just the kind of guy they're looking for. Yeah, but he wants to meet up again. So cut to, Sergeant is telling Ron about the current Grand Wizard of the Klan, David Duke, and that he's becoming mainstream and kind of leaning towards not so much violence, and that they eventually want someone in office. You know, he's always wearing a three-piece suit, now goes as national director. It's just another way to sell hate with affirmative action, crime, tax reform, immigration, you know, all of that can be, you can sell it as okay. Like it's just a political thing. It doesn't hurt anybody. It's just political. Yeah. So then he goes, well, no one wants to be called a bigot anymore. Archie Bunker made it like super uncool. And then you get everybody everybody to accept it, and then you get someone in the White House that embodies that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's where it starts to feel super icky, because... Yeah.
Ron Stallworth says to the Sarge, America would never elect someone like David Duke into office.
And he says, coming from a black man, that's pretty naive.
Yeah.
And then the sergeant says, why don't you wake up?
Yeah.
It's like just how in the history part of it, where there's like, there's been three like major resurgences of the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost feels like there's like a fourth one that had started when Donald Trump became president, or 100%. Was even during his campaign, like that began like a fourth resurgence. And it's,
they just changed
shameful.
Their name to Proud Boys or whatever.
Yep.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
So, no, you're totally fine. So Ron is on the stakeout and Flip is walking into Felix's house. Felix's wife, Connie, comes out and greets Flip. She's super sweet, you know, like all white women can be. Have a sweet face on.
Homemaker.
You walk in, the guys are in a meeting. They're talking about, you know, what they need to do.
Racist asshole shit.
Yeah, yep. Just fucking.
Yeah.
And she comes in with her cheese plick.
And she kind of interjects and she's like, you know what we should do? And she starts talking about Patrice and how she's, you know, outspoken and all that good stuff. She says, we should shut her down. She quickly gets dismissed because she's a stupid woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, that's fine, but you're gonna need me later. So then they tell Ron, you know, that they hope he gets his member card in time for the cross burning, because without the member card, you don't have full benefits.
You don't get full access.
Nope. Felix takes him down to the basement and shows Flip the guns, and he's like, I can't remember what the name was, but he says what her name is, and did you note that?
The gun?
Yeah.
He says, calls it the Jew killer.
Yeah.
Right, that's right, yeah.
And then he's like, well, that looks like, and he, like, names off the gun.
Remington. The actual name.
Yeah, the so then it's recorded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's super smart.
Oh, I never actually, I don't think I acknowledged that in my
brain.
Oh,
I didn't either. Mm-hmm. I just thought he was being a smartass.
Yeah.
So
I guess now it's on tape.
Like,
yeah.
Like, they could, like, potentially use that as, like,
yeah,
like, you have these weapons.
Right.
That,
and then Felix confirms. He says,
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah. Okay. Hey.
Mm-hmm. So it's
damn.
Smart.
Yeah. I just
so
went
smart,
right
me too. And I watched it twice.
He's, you know, doing his job, being a good cop.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank God for
you're
me,
like,
babe.
Wow, he's just showing off that he's a smart guy.
Yeah, well,
no,
and
this
he's
is
like,
for real smart guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Layers.
So
layers.
Many layers.
It's like an onion. Or Shrek.
Shrek. Okay. So, yeah. So then he's like, well, Felix says to Walter that he needs to make sure there's no Jew in him. And Walter's like,
God.
Be nice, you know, he's gonna be a brother and whatever. You know, total
this is how
brush.
We, this is how we can't, or why we can't keep recruits. That's what
he's like. He's like pounding on the door.
It's like, you gotta scare him.
So Felix insists that he needs to check. He has a fucking lie detector test in there. Felix, I mean, Flip is obviously freaked out, and he's like, "Haha, do you call this your Jew den or something?" What?
Mm-hmm.
It's something like that, yeah.
Yeah, your Jew den. Are you making candles down here?
Right. Like, he's really good at, like, keeping the conversation going to not actually make things happen. Like, he's distraction.
Yeah.
And also to kind of, like, disarm him.
So he's about to do it. And then he's like, since they're talking about Jews, he's like, you know what? The Holocaust never happened. Where's the proof? Which people genuinely think that's a thing. And that's absolutely insane to me. So then Flip responds, are you high? And then he paused. And it's like this huge pregnant breath, and he's like, the Holocaust is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
I thought about that.
You know, Jews are leeches and you have to get rid of, and Jews run Hollywood, and that's blah blah blah. Anyways, it's stupid.
Just all the rhetoric that they say about Jewish people.
Yeah. And then he's like, let me see your dick.
Yeah.
Is your dick circumcised? And then he, like, throws it back in his face. He's like, oh, you wanna see my dick, you...
F word.
Yeah, you know, J slang, F slang. Yeah. I know, I'm like, bad.
Oh, slur.
Yeah, slur. What did I say?
Slang.
Oh.
Slang, slur.
Well, I guess it is technically kind of slang.
Slang that is a slur.
So, he, like, throws it back in Felix's face and then, like, insults him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's to, like, kind of disarm him and...
Yeah. And Felix is like, you are. You know?
The no you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all of this is happening and Ron is fucking listening to him being like, get that gun out of my face, you know, stuff like that. So Ron is running up while all this shit is happening and he throws a rock through the window, which is genius. And then they all go to run and Connie's freaking out, slurring all this shit, and they run outside and flip. This is so genius. He grabs the gun from somebody else.
Mm-hmm. From Felix
and starts shooting and obviously missing on purpose. But he did it in such a cool guy way that, you know, it just seemed like heat of the moment, missed type deal.
That he was like so angry. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, I don't have my gun, so I'm going to take your gun.
Yeah.
All fired up.
And he says, you still want me to take your Jew test?
Yeah, your Jew detective test.
Ooh. Yeah, they think that he's so cool after that.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's when, like, Walter's like, hey.
I'm feeling you. Yeah. I'm feeling you.
Ooh, what friend?
Yeah. I see you, Ron Stallworth.
Mm-hmm.
Flip some.
Cut to Sarge's office. Sorry, I just love this thing. He's, like, freaking out. He's like, shots fired, lie detector test, like, I'm getting jerked around by the chief, by this, by that. Everyone's jerking my chain. It's this big circle jerk. So that's a good... I wrote big circle jerk pretty big.
Yeah. Some comic relief in there.
Yeah, I needed that. Flip is obviously freaked out after that. And he's like, why am I doing this? I could lose my life. And for what cause? And Ron is like, dude, you're Jewish. Like, why haven't you bought into this? Like, you've been hiding as a white boy this whole time when you really have skin in the game. And that just kind of gets Flip thinking, I think. Then, cut to, Ron calls to get his membership card early, and he ends up talking to David Duke. And he's like, I am so honored to talk to a true white American hero.
Oh, God. Topher Grace.
Topher Grace. Ooh.
His immediate response is there any other kind? He's explaining, you know, I need to get my card, but, you know, it hasn't come yet or whatever. And he's talking about how they need more men like you. I'm going to make sure personally that this is going to get through. Every time that they hang up, it's always, God bless white America. So cut to, they're walking in the hall and asshole cop is back and he pushes the paper out of his hands. And yeah, it's just kind of like him still being an asshole. And then Ron is talking to Flip and what's the other guy's name?
Jimmy.
So Ron is talking to Flip and Jimmy about Landers. That's when you find out what this scumbag's name is. And they're like, he's been a bad cop for a long time. And they mention that he shot and killed a black kid and said that he got a that he had a gun on him, but it's not the type. And he's like, how do you guys tolerate this stuff? And he's like, you want to be that rat? Like, we're a family. Right or wrong, we stick together. Ron's like, sounds like another group that I know.
Yeah.
I liked that commentary because it is, like, within the police department.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's like, a fraternity.
Yeah, and those who do speak up or do something about it, they get run out of town. Mm-hmm. They lose their job.
So then it cuts to Flip, and he's hanging out with the Klansmen, and they're out in the woods shooting guns, and they're talking about a gay bar and how the gays are trying to, well, they're obviously not using the word gays. Lots of F words all over the place. So they're like, first they're gonna try and colonize, and then they're gonna want equal treatment. And they're talking about how they should, like, take care of that, you know. Did they talk about a bomb or attacking it or anything? I can't remember. I didn't know it. Anyways, so Flip sees these two other guys just kind of away, and he's like, who are those guys? Like, are they military? Ivan is like, they're army trained. And he's like, who are they? And he's like, classified. So then Flip, playing Ron, obviously, they bet him that he can't make this target, who they acknowledge is, like, a black guy. And he shoots the gun really fast and makes it. Yeah, they're, like, kind of, like, whoa, where'd you learn to shoot like that? He's like, oh, my dad, ever since he got me a toy cap gun. Then, later on, the real Ron is walking out to the shooting range, and it shows what the targets were, and they were metal cutouts of
caricatures of black people.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And, like, I don't know how to describe that. It's just bad.
Mm. It's and also to just the scene itself, because, you know, he's come out, like, after they all left. He was obviously surveilling them. He's got his camera, his binoculars and everything. Mm-hmm. And you see him, like, lean down and pick up a shotgun shell and then turn around and see the targets. They're just, like I said, it's just a caricature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You and know how people fucking love to make caricatures of minorities, so
yeah,
that you can kind of, like, picture what that is,
mm-hmm.
you know,
from other things that are out there as stereotypes.
And it's just a really slow and impactful scene.
Yeah.
How he, like, pats it, mm-hmm. like, I'm so sorry. Kind of thing. Like, yeah. It represents all of the black people that have been needlessly shot down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's
killed simply because of ignorance and hate.
Racism.
Yeah.
Hate for what?
For what?
I still don't understand it.
You repeat over and over again, like, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. But it's a good thing. There's a good thing that I don't fucking get it. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing that we don't fucking get it. Because those people are pieces of shit.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Why does it even have to be a thing?
Yeah, why
is
it a thing?
That is something that has bothered me my entire life.
Cut to Ron and Patrice. They're talking about movies. And I like this part because it's something that I would not have noticed before this. And I think Ron notices that he didn't realize that a lot of Hollywood movies are, like, fantasizing black people, fetishizing black people, and, like, mm-hmm. making them perceived in a certain way as, like, pimps and, like, gangsters and things of that nature. And Patrice is talking about, you know, black liberation, and I liked that they actually showed the covers of the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, hey, this is actually real. It's not, like, part of a script. Like, this is for real what Hollywood puts out. Yeah, and she's just like, these images of these stereotypes is damaging to black people. And you can see that, again, Ron is being educated by her. Like, she's opening up his understanding, and he's realizing that he's been sheltered from that experience in his life personally. So then they're back at Ron's place. I hope they were making out.
They were.
I hope so. So somebody knocks at the door.
This is where Felix
quick.
Yeah. Knocks on the door and Ron answers and he's like, wrong address. Felix is like, wrong address.
Yeah.
And then
But he's like, you can see, like, in his face.
Oh, yeah. Just like, he's fucking...
There's something here. Yeah.
He is a very good investigator in that mm-hmm. part.
Yeah. Like, for how stupid he is.
Yeah, for how dumb he is, he's actually, like, why he was, like, bet, flip, that, like, maybe you can't shoot this because he was missing...
Right.
When he was shooting at Ron. And so it's like, oh, you probably won't make this. So he'll have to pay me 50 bucks. And or like, I'm suspicious of you anyway.
Think of that, you know? Either.
And so he's like seeing if he's either.
Wow.
Might be full of shit, you know?
Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah.
For real. Flip shows up at Felix's and Felix is like, you have a twin. He's like, what are you talking about? He's saying, you know, I went to your house and this black guy answered, and quickly Flip is like, that's my old address.
Yeah,
and
he said, as I'm not listed.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not unlisted. Where did you go?
So, yeah, he gives the address, come by and have a beer with me or something.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, do you know who was there? Patrice, that chick. And lots of mean things were said there.
Yep, just really disgusting. And again, poor Flip. He has to say these awful things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cut to, he gets the card. And Flip starts kind of opening up to Ron about how he just wasn't raised to be Jewish. He was just a white kid. He didn't do any of the rituals. He didn't go to temple or anything. Now it's all he thinks about. And now he thinks about it all the time. And he's being asked to just say that he is not Jewish. And he has to confront that.
It's really doing a number on him.
Yeah. Okay, cut to... The Black Student Union is getting together, and there's these flyers everywhere, and the flyers say, you can sleep tonight knowing the Klan is awake. It's all over the neighbors, it's all over the cars, it's all over the place, and Ron is like, it's just fear tactics, be cool, and they're like, well, we have been cool, like, it's time for action.
Yeah.
Then it cuts to Ivan and Flip. They're basically, like, scouting out this location for where they want to burn a cross. And they're seeing that there's a lot of cops driving by. Mm-hmm. And really, it's Ron in another car talking to dispatch saying to send another one.
Yeah.
It ends up freaking them out so much that they end up not
calling it off.
Yeah, they call off the cross burning. Ivan kind of mentions there that they have a little bit of protection from cops, but, you know, if there's going to be a lot, they can't do stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a conversation that is voiced over this scene of David Duke talking to Ron, which was just, you know, their conversations have been, you know, racist as fuck.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Oh,
God, that's an understatement.
Ron tells a story of this kid named Butter Biscuit.
Oh, God.
It lives across the street from him.
Uh-huh. And then his dad said that he couldn't play with him because he was black.
I feel like that was something that happened, but flipped, obviously.
He had, like, a white friend when he was growing up?
Yeah. Seems like it.
David Douglas, that's his name, right?
David Duke?
David Duke. Okay, so David Duke is like, yeah, your dad sounds like a good man, and he's like, I was raised right, blah, blah, blah. Also kind of overlapping is they're going to be targeting Patrice from here on out, basically. Then it cuts back to David Duke saying, you know, we need to get someone in office. And he says that they need to bring back America's greatness. MAGA.
Don't they actually say that at some point
at the
movie?
Banquet? Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. I had to, like, pause it a bunch of times and just be like...
Yeah.
Yikes.
David Duke is like, hey, I'm coming to Colorado Springs and I'm going to be at your initiation. or your blessing, or whatever he calls it. Then it cuts to Walter on the phone with his BFF Ron, and he's saying, you know, like, I'm gonna be moving, and I need a predecessor, and he's gonna recommend that it be Ron. And it pans to Ron, and he's like, what the fuck? And he makes the brilliant excuse of, you know, my dad's sick and I'm going to be out of town a lot. And he needs, Walter mentions, you know, we need someone eloquent like you. How does a black man talk?
Oh, God. Oh, how fucking David Duke. Like, the
aura. Yeah, I mentioned the and. Yeah.
So then it cuts to a meeting, and Walter is saying, you know, I recommend Ron as the next leader. And Felix and Ivan immediately are mad. They're like, he's just a rookie off the street. And Ron, like, pipes in right away. He's like, hey, I can't, you know, explains the situation with his dad. And then it cuts to David Duke and Ron on the phone. And he's like, well, I can tell that you're not black. How can you tell I'm not black? And he's like, well, because of the way they speak. And he's like, wow, can you give me some examples? His example is the way they say R. We say R. They say R-ra.
Oh my God.
I'm like, what the fuck is that?
And he, like, gets the Sarge. Listen to this.
They are just laughing. Uh-huh. And it's like, oh my God, are they serious?
Yeah.
Which happened in real life.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Like, yes. They would sometimes listen in on his conversations with him, and, like, they would eventually have to leave the room because they couldn't keep it together.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And Soul Brother. Yeah, so then he's like, well, thank you for your lesson, you know.
Wow, I had no idea.
We need to, thank you for this education.
And when he says, like, I can tell that you're white, he's like, I can tell that you're pure white Aryan man.
It's so funny. Yeah. So then it cuts to Connie and Felix. Their pillow talk.
Oh, God.
That scene is so cringy. It's so fucking cringy.
And you know that there are people like that.
You know there are people who, like, cuddle up in bed at night and talk about how fucking racist they
are.
They're like, honey, I love how racist you are.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, honey, I love how racist you are, too.
Yeah.
Like, fuck off.
And Connie's like, oh, I love you. Thank you so much for loving me and giving me a purpose.
A purpose?
It's like,
purpose and direction.
Yeah.
Purpose and direction, Connie? That's what I wrote.
Connie,
come on. You're be more than like this. Laura Linney,
or
Connie.
Or are you? Be more like Laura Linney, Connie. Throwback. <Yeah.
laughs> It cuts to Ron meeting with an agent in secret, like, under a bridge, you know. And he's saying, like, we're monitoring these army guys, you know, and can you believe they're in charge of our safety? And he's like, well, we've been following your investigation, thank you. And he's like, so the Klan is working with the army. And he's like, isn't there something that you can do or the FBI can do? And he's like, FBI? We never had this conversation.
See ya.
Yeah, so he's working with the fucking FBI. So then it cuts to Ron telling Patrice not to go to the march or protest. He ends up saying why he knows, and he confesses that he's been undercover, and obviously she's mad. And then it cuts to Felix saying the attack is off because there's so much police action. Then it cuts to Ron being assigned to protect David Duke.
Oh, God. Did that happen in real life?
It had to have.
Okay. I was like, that's too big of a thing to make up for the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he's being assigned to protect David Duke, and Landers is egging Ron on. Ron ends up charging at him, and they're like, if this is bugging you, like, you're not gonna make it protecting David Duke. Yeah, so it cuts to Connie being coached to lay a bomb. This guy is, like, coaching her through it, and they're gonna do C4 at Patrice's house. Cut to Ron driving up to protect David Duke. Ron doesn't agree with, like, he tells... Like, he shakes David Duke's hand and he says, "While I don't agree with what you stand for, I'm still going to be professional and make sure you don't die.
Yeah. Do everything in my power and means to protect you."
Yes. So then they're inside, they're at the reception, and Ron, Flip, meets David Duke, and Ivan and Felix are like, "Who the hell is this guy that is supposedly watching or protecting David Duke?" And then they are, like, creepily side by side Ron.
Yeah.
Real Ron. Like,
trying to intimidate him.
Yeah. So creepy. Jesus. And they're like, "You can't go in there." And then Ivan turns around and does the creepiest, like, show of the fact that he's stupid and is willing to do anything right now.
Yeah, like he's, like, crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
But like, also,
he's capable of anything.
Yeah. So cringy.
So he's cringy.
He's the worst. He sucks so bad. He sucks, but he also is so
the
good.
Way he, like, he's barely opens his eyes. He did it in I, Tonya, too, where he, like, barely opens his eyes and he's like, I probably look just like him.
I know. I kind of want to be like, "MK, stop." I love him. Stop.
Did you see it?
Oh, yeah, my God. Okay. He's just like, his acting is so good. So stupid.
I know. It's, oh, God.
So it pans to the BSU having a meeting with Jerome Turner. He's an old black man who's giving a talk about his friend Jesse.
Which is a real story.
It was claimed that he raped and killed a white woman. He was developmentally challenged. And the jury was all white, and it only took them 4 minutes to deliberate that he was guilty. So this scene is kind of going back and forth between this story and David Duke talking about his friend, the Nobel Prize winner, Dr. William Shockley, a eugenics study that he's running proves that white people have the superior race, that they are the superior race. And then he tells them, "All right, put your hoods on." Pans back to the story of Jesse being dragged by a mob and then stabbed and beaten. And then they cut off his testicles. Pan to David Duke doing the ceremony, talking about how God has blessed them to be true white men. And all while Ron is actually watching from a window up above, which I couldn't imagine what that would be like. Pans back to the story of Jesse. They end up also cutting off his fingers, and then they make a bonfire and they raise him up and down over the bonfire slowly until he dies. So then it pans to Flip or Ron. They're asking him, "Are you a non-Jewish male?" "Yes." "In favor of white government?" "Yes." Now he is a member of the Klan. Pans back to pictures of Jesse and his body that they were sold as postcards, and then his remains were put into a bag, and his remains were sold as souvenirs. The event was so exciting that they let the kids out of school to see, which, it's, who would let their kids see that? Doesn't matter what race it is. That's fucking
racists.
Traumatizing.
And one of the
things that was the sorry, I interrupted. He says, like, a lot of how they acted had to do, because I think a year before that, Birth of a Nation came out.
Yep.
That, you know, obviously caused the second resurgence of the.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, sorry.
I was going to say, too, it was something that I actually had learned in school, was that that's not, like, that story
about that, selling postcards of lynchings mm-hmm. and just torture and killings was mm-hmm. not an uncommon practice. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. like, selling the remains of victims was not mm-hmm. uncommon. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I just remember being in high school and just being like,
oh, fuck. Yeah.
I never learned about this in school.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of places that, I mean, there's a whole part of the country that doesn't want people to know that yeah. history.
Well, I mean, you think of Southern California and you don't think sheltered.
Right,
you
that's true.
They're still trying to get rid of that information, including banning books now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's...
Like, don't talk about gay people.
Gay.
I'm gonna fucking say gay. Whatever.
Protect trans kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fuck yeah. So it pans to David Duke opening up the doors and celebrating Ron has been baptized by the light. Pans back to the story of Jesse and how the movie of The Birth of a Nation was so powerful that it brought back a resurgence of the KKK. And then it pans to back to the Klan watching that movie, cheering and chanting, you know.
In my research, I learned that Birth of a Nation is 3 hours long.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah.
It's
so gross.
It pans back Jerome Turner, who is saying if this movie was released now, it would be considered a blockbuster. Mm-hmm. And it was so popular that Woodrow Wilson showed it at the White House, saying that history was written in lightning. Hang on, I have the direct quote down here, actually. It is like writing history with lightning, and my only regret is that it is all so terribly true. Both audiences are cheering, chanting, and one is saying white power and one is saying black power. Then it pans back to David Duke talking about America First, which I was like, damn it, my credit union is America First.
Oh, God.
God.
I'm like, dear God, I hope it's not that kind of thing. And then I'm like, oh, it's based in Utah. Maybe it is.
Oh, God.
Anyways, he's talking about America First, and I feel so bad. It pans over to, like, the waiters, and there's two white girls, and they're just smiling ear to ear, and then it pans over to the black waiters, and they're all just fucking rightfully pissed. They're having a reception afterwards, and Felix and Connie are coming up to David Duke, and they're talking and whatever, and they shake hands at the end of their conversation, and they do their special handshake, which is tapping the inside of the other person's wrist and just tapping there, which is definitely akin to Masonic and Mormon temple signals. Yeah, there's lots of handshakes in the Mormon temple, and one is very similar to that. Just holding your finger rather than tapping. The inspiration for basically all of the temple rituals in Mormon temples is taken from
Masonic.
Freemasons. Yeah.
And they're like...
That's a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, that's a fucking...
That's white supremacy right there. The bomb guy, the guy that was teaching Connie. I don't think they ever say his name.
That guy, isn't he like Italian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, okay, so mm-hmm. they're just... Yeah. Oh, it's interesting that they would be, like, letting him...
Well, I should have looked this up. But there was a time period where white was defined, like the races were defined.
Oh.
And Italian and Irish were also like put the in whitest, that category.
Like mm-hmm. just white.
White.
Okay, never mind then. Oof.
Anyway, I think it says his name is Walker.
Okay. Walker, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Who?
So,
the C4 guy. Or he's like explaining to
who? What?
He likes this guy taught Connie about the
C4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bomb guy.
Can I touch the C4?
No C4 for you.
God. Ivanhoe is the worst.
I cannot. Believe it. Okay. So, Walker.
So, the bomb guy, Walker, recognizes Ron as Flip because he was arrested by him, and he's telling Felix about it, and he's like, well, he's a Jew. It could have been worse. And then Felix looks at Ron, realizes that's the guy who answered the door, then he pans over to Flip, and it connects.
Yeah, he figures it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're like, what are we gonna do about it? Okay, we gotta, like, choose our moment wisely. So the real Ron asks to take a picture with David Duke because no one would believe him that he was taking care of him, being his bodyguard. And then, right as they're taking the picture, he grabs them and obviously, like, he puts his arms around
them. Yeah, and, like, pulls them close to him.
And they're all like, how dare you touch me? And all
pissed.
Bitches.
Little bitches.
I can't believe you would do that. That was the best.
He reminds him, you know, I could arrest you for assaulting a police officer if you fucking touch me. Which, this happened in real life.
Hell yeah.
Yes. So, keep writing, bomb guy. Walker and Felix are sending Connie off because it's time. Ron sees it. He knows what's going down. He runs out to his car, calls for backup. Felix introduces Walker to Flip across the table, hoping that David Duke is going to pay attention to this conversation. They quickly get cut off because Felix is drawn away because Connie is calling on the phone for him. And it's, like, perfect because it just cuts it off.
Yeah, well, like, and Felix had just called Flip as Ron Flip.
Yeah.
And then Flip was like, Flip. And then the phone call happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, he played that off well. He's like,
Yeah.
That's quick.
Mm-hmm. Very good at him's job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Connie is calling because she has to cancel. There's way too many cops at the demonstration, which I wonder why. There's an inside man. So then Felix comes back, grabs Ivan and Walker, and they all walk out.
Okay. Thank God. I stopped taking notes because I was watching it.
I forgot I fell asleep. Okay, so Flip, you know, says, "Oh, we knew each other from prison," and then there's a voiceover of David Duke talking about all of the right wing,
just more
shit. Anti-white country.
You know, just spewing poison.
Just gross.
Mm-hmm. And all of this voiceover is happening while Connie is trying to put C4 into Patricia's mailbox. That doesn't end up working.
Like, she's like, when she's like trying to like force it in a mailbox, I'm like, you're so dumb.
You're so dumb. So dumb.
Yeah, so she sees that Patrice is coming home, and so she runs out and ends up putting the bomb under Patrice's car instead. Ron sees it happening, and he is telling her to stop. She's not. She's running. He tackles her to the ground and tries to arrest her, and of course, the whole time she's being a Karen and can't believe that rules apply to her.
Mm-hmm.
The cops show up and they don't believe that Ron is a cop. They, you know, Connie is screaming, you know, he attacked me, he tried to rape me, and like all this shit. And they're about to arrest him because they think he's reaching for a gun.
Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm a cop. They're like, show us your badge. He's like, okay, I'm gonna get it. And they're like, no, hands up, show us your badge. And they're like, saying, show us your badge, but handcuffing him at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck do you want him to do?
Right. And there's so many video accounts of shit like that happening where it's like, okay, tell me what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you're making this an impossible situation to do what you want.
Of course they do the whole, like, oh, well, if you just listened to the police and did what they told you. It's like, but the police
are fucking telling you to do completely opposite things and you can't do it. Fucking victim blaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they start beating the shit out of him.
Mm-hmm. All that's happening, Patrice comes running out the door because she realizes some cops are beating somebody up. So then Felix and Walker and Ivan show up driving up, but they end up stopping by Patrice's car. They think that it's on the porch, not under the car. They detonate. It blows up their car. They all die. Patrice is close to the car. She gets blown over, but she's still okay.
Yeah.
And she realizes that the guy that the cops are beating is Ron. So it's like, lots of drama.
And then Ron drives up. Well, not Ron. Flip. He drives up and he's like, he's a cop, dumbass. And then the white cops are like, oh shit, he's a cop. And it's like,
it's like, of course, the white cop tells you that he's a cop.
Then he's a cop.
And one of them was like, that guy's a cop?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he just told you 7,000 times.
Yeah, I said Flip shows and yells at them.
Gives him what for?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so then they pan to Ron and Pat at a bar. Landers shows up and he's drunk and he puts himself into their booth and he is getting all into Patrice's bubble and he's talking about that night and how she looked so good, and this is all his account of feeling her up. She's like, how often do you do that? Like, is this something you do all the time? Landers just goes off on, like, he can do anything and never get caught, and I can put you in your place, and, you know, threatening them. She wishes
it was her that got blown up instead, good white Americans.
Mm-hmm. This is such a, like, great scene, though, but despite Landers being such a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like, he's like, you got that? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, I got it. Did you get it? Did you get it? Everyone got it. The chief walks out. He got it.
Gets arrested.
Yes, that was awesome.
They get back to the police department, and Ron is basically a celebrity in the office. Everybody's high-fiving him, and, you know, all this stuff, and then they go into the chief's office expecting this big congratulations and, you know, let's get more into this or something, you know. He says that because of budget cuts, no more credible leads, they're going to need them to destroy the evidence and cease contact with the KKK. So obviously all of them walk out pretty upset.
Seems like it's like inside job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one like of them says
higher ups is involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of them's like, shenanigans, I tell ya.
Yeah,
It's like you were supportive of this whole thing until now.
Until now, we get
a little suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to, you know, we expose the Klan.
Mm-hmm. Ron's about to walk out, and his phone starts ringing again. And he's almost gone, and then he decides to go back and actually answer it. And it's another call from Mr. David Duke, and they're just kind of talking. He said, so Ron asks him, did you ever get that detective's name? And he's like, no. And his response is, you sure? Yeah, and then everybody's, like, laughing and stuff.
Yeah, and he hangs up.
Yeah, which that also happened in real life, where his last phone call, the Sarge was next to him and fell out of his chair a couple times and had to leave.
That's awesome.
I probably will. I don't know. Let's see what happens. So then it goes to Patrice and Ron, and she's asking him if he's gonna resign, and he's not. And she's like, well, I can't be with you. So they're about to talk about that more, and there's a knock at the door. And I put, this is the coolest shot ever through the hallway. Mm-hmm. Like, they're like, shoot, they have their guns out. And by the way, Patrice is a badass and has a gun in her purse.
I love it when he turns around. He's like, hold on. Oh,
oh, he's okay. Like,
all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, the hallway is moving almost. It's it's really cool. Anyways,
and through Spike Lee trademark.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Oh, Spike Lee, love him. So they see out the window there is a very large cross burning in the distance, and then it shows them the clan creepily doing this almost ritual around the cross and shouting blood and soil. It cuts to real footage of 2017 in Charlottesville.
Motherfuckers with their tiki torches.
Yeah.
Idiots.
They ruined tiki torches and I'm mad about it.
Yeah. I will never, ever, ever buy
it. It's like now.
Really?
I feel like now they're almost like a symbol of white supremacists.
Just watching them walk
the
like
white
that
nationalist
again.
Symbol is a tiki torch.
Yeah. It's like the whitest bullshit.
Because
now, after watching this footage again, I'm like, oh my god, they did have tiki torches.
And I just remember like everybody just mocking them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With good reason, you're gonna march through the streets with a tiki torch.
Yelling, chanting blood and soil.
Mm-hmm.
Like, calm the fuck down.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, it's not funny, but it's so fucking awful and ridiculous.
It's simultaneously just so awful, but like, they were trying so hard to be scary and failed miserably.
I mean, I think they failed because
they didn't fail.
Scared.
It was fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, like tiki
they're not as menacing. It's scary, but if they came in like with like torches, they're not that hard to make.
They're not
right.
They're no.
Yeah, like
they're cheaper than a tiki torch.
So it's real footage in Charlottesville. They're chanting blood and soil, white lives matter, Jews will not replace us. And it's all panning back and forth from that to the Black Lives Matter protests and the violence that was happening there. And then it shoots David Duke during that time, like, real time, it's real footage of him talking about Trump taking America back and that he was alluding to all of that. And then I wrote down the clip of the Trump speech. He said, you had a group on one side that was bad and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. Not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists. You also had people that were very fine people. The quote from David Duke is, I believe that today in Charlottesville, this is a first step towards making a realization of something Trump alluded to earlier in the campaign, which is this is the first step towards taking America back. And then it shows the footage of the car plowing into the protest and the trauma that happened from that. It showed a picture of Heather Heyer, who was born May 29th, 1985, and passed on August 12th, 2017. And that's it.
Fiend. Fuck. So, I got some facts for y'all. I got my sources from IMDb, Screen Rant, and Wikipedia. Topher Grace was so depressed after portraying David Duke. He took a break from acting and took on a project editing all three Hobbit movies into one two-hour movie.
I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do, man.
Yeah.
You know?
He's like,
good job, Topher Grace.
I love Topher Grace. I love him a lot more after that.
Right?
Reading that fact.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
I know.
He studied Duke for a month. He watched documentaries, read books, did everything he could. Topher Grace discovered that Duke was even more racist than he thought, but the most disturbing was Duke's ability to charm an audience despite the hateful speech.
Ew.
Yeah.
Do you know if he was chosen by the director to play him, or...
So, Topher Grace and Spike Lee actually have the same agent.
Oh,
and okay. He never asks his agent for, you know, to send people his way, but he did make an exception for Topher Grace.
Okay.
Yeah, so he had him in mind.
Okay.
Or if his name came up, he was like, because check this out. So
I was wondering, because I feel like there's a resemblance.
Oh, yeah. So I found this on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's an article that is one of my sources where it has all of the side-by-sides.
Oh, really?
It's a good one. I should pull that up.
Huh. Wow, so, that's... Damn.
Right?
You should put that in the post.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally gonna put that on there. Ron, the guy who plays Ron Stallworth, John David Washington, is Denzel Washington's son.
Blows my mind.
Whoa!
Yeah, and Ron Stallworth said he wanted Denzel Washington to play him, but got his son instead.
Well, there you go. I think that's pretty neat still.
Yeah, and also, John David was in Malcolm X with Denzel Washington.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
He was signed by the St. Louis Rams after going undrafted in the 2006 NFL draft. John David Washington was a football player, and then he's an actor, and then he's Denzel Washington's son.
Neat.
So he's a talented,
yeah, he's got interesting
guy.
When Jordan Peele first approached Spike Lee with the story, Spike Lee said it sounded more like a Dave Chappelle skit than an actual historical event.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Have you seen that?
Yes.
What?
The sketch.
Oh, I haven't.
Oh.
Of Black Klansman?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Oh, God. We'll have to watch that. Yeah. It's so bad. Okay.
it's a lot.
He said it sounded like a Dave Chappelle skit, and when Jordan Peele proved to him that it wasn't, that's when he was like, I have to do this. But he had two conditions. He wanted to have some comedy elements, and then he wanted to use the story to explore contemporary racial issues. This movie had no deleted scenes.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's like unheard of. When Spike Lee was a student at NYU Film School, not California School of Movies.
The Greeley University of Moving Pictures.
The professors, they taught Birth of the Nation. And
did they really?
Yeah.
Yucko.
And he was pissed, obviously. So they teach it, but with no mention of the racist message that it sends out. They just show it because, like, this is a groundbreaking movie, leaving out the fact that it
is racist AF.
Yeah. Like,
do you happen to know by any chance when he was going to school there?
So it said that in response to that, in 1980, he made the answer as a response.
Okay.
And they actually tried to get him kicked out of school.
Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
But he was saved by the faculty vote. So some faculty members. But then, after Lee's success, he became a prep professor at NYU Film School. This one hurts. So the shooting targets, they weren't props that were made. They found them online and bought them.
That's disgusting.
And Spike Lee didn't tell John David until right before they shot that scene where he walks up to him.
Wow. So, like, when I was talking about how it's, like, a really, like, somber scene and everything, like, that was actually even more somber for the actual actor.
Yeah.
That's
heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So, the guy who plays Felix, Jasper Pekonen, he's Finnish in real life. But he wanted the part so badly. He showed up to his audition in character.
Oh, wow.
And Spike Lee didn't know that he was an American.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then Jasper found inspiration for his character by just living in America and seeing racism. So he just had to go out the front fucking door portray a really fucking scary Klansman. Mm.
It's just ingrained in our society.
Yeah.
It's just a thing.
For too many people, it's just okay.
But yeah, I said Charlottesville, Unite the Right Valley happened while the film was being edited. So Lee thought it was a perfect way to end the film. They got permission from the family to memorialize Heather Hare. Rest in power. So on the back of the card, it says, I pledge to entirely work for the preservation, protection, and advancement of the white race. To forever be loyal to the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan as the only true Klan. To obey all orders from officers of the Empire. To keep secret all fellow members and Klan rituals. To never discuss any Klan affairs with any plainclothes officers on a state, local, or national level, to fulfill social, fraternal, and financial obligations to this order for as long as I live. Patrice is a fictional character.
Oh, okay.
Spike Lee actually texted John David offering him the role.
He just texted him?
Yeah. He was like, John David was like, is this a joke?
Is Spike Lee texting me right now?
Yeah, like offering me a starring role in his movie.
I play football.
The day that they shot the scene where Harry Belafonte tells the true story about Jesse Washington, Lee insisted that everyone wear formal attire.
I mean, after all, like, the scene calls for it, but also, goddamn, Harry Belafonte.
Yeah. Last thing, Spike Lee became the second Black American to be nominated at the Academy Awards for producing, writing, and directing in the same year. The first was Jordan Peele for the movie Get Out.
Fucking love Jordan Peele.
And both men won Oscars for their writing achievements. And Jordan Peele was a producer for Black Klansman.
Hell yeah.
Those are my facts.
Fun facts.
Woo.
All right. Give us the real story.
Okay, you'll be surprised, but Vanity Fair had a really good article about this.
Vanity Fair has a lot of really good articles about stuff you wouldn't expect it to.
Right?
Like Playboy.
Yeah. Playboy. What was it? Oh, that was from Mothman.
Yeah.
So there is... so much of this is, like, actual quotes and real things that happened, like him saying no one would ever believe that I was pulling this investigation off to David Duke. He really said that to him. Ron was sworn into the CSPD on his 21st birthday.
No way.
Mm-hmm. And he was the first Black man in there, and also it says that he spent his first year just kind of like pestering the undercover cops, like seeing what he needed to do to prepare himself, and also like pitching himself as a worthy undercover. He has said in a few interviews that his afro was exaggerated. His was about an inch shorter than it was in the movie. The scene where Kwame is telling Ron to arm himself and get ready because the revolution is coming. That was a real quote. So Ron did meet a girl there, but she was German, and he didn't flirt with her because A, of the job, and B, he was actually dating the woman that he ended up marrying.
Oh, this is sweet.
Yeah, he said he didn't talk about his undercover stuff for the most part with his family and girlfriend. So his job was to look through newspapers for suspicious activity, and the movie was placed in 1972, but his investigation was between 1978 and 1979. He saw in a classified ad for joining the KKK. In real life, it was actually a P.O. box, not a phone number. So he actually had to send a letter asking for more information. He provided an unlisted, untraceable phone number and an untraceable address, but he did sign the letter with his real name. He explained that he didn't think that the correspondence would lead to an investigation to start with. So he was just like, whatever, I'm just like getting info. Yeah, at most he figured he would maybe get a pamphlet, but he got a phone call 2 weeks later.
Yeesh. Oh, so it wasn't like right away.
No, it was not. The man that was starting the local chapter asked why he was interested. Ron was so caught off guard that he just launched into a profane monologue about hating minorities.
Oh god.
He just went into it like just not really know what just to say.
Fucking unleashed.
Mm-hmm. So Ron says that the on-screen version is almost word for word.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, he offered a more cleaned-up version for NPR later.
Oh, my favorite.
Yeah. He said, I told him that I was a white man that hated blacks, Jews, Mexicans, Asians, that I thought the white man had not gotten a fair deal in this country. I was really upset because my sister had dated a black guy, and it offended me that his black hands had touched her white body, and as a result, I wanted to join the group and do whatever I could to get to stop all of this nonsense. This is actually a quote from him. He told me that I was the exact kind of person that they were looking for, and he was very enthusiastic about meeting with me.
Chris.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was offended that his black hands touched her white body.
Yeah.
What a Ron is not a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But
like,
Ron.
You know that people have said, like, the reason he said it, it's because he's heard other people say it.
Yeah.
So, the real-life partner was an undercover cop in narcotics, and his name is Chuck. He's not Jewish. He's not Jewish. Ron says that they haven't talked in years.
How was he after that? Do we have any information on how Chuck was coping with what he had to do?
I couldn't really find anything from his perspective. I actually think that Chuck might be a fake name.
So he's just like, I want nothing to do with this.
Yeah, and plus, if you're an undercover cop,
they could come after.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he did the same thing, so, like, Ron Stallworth.
But he wasn't the one that was undercover, like, showing his face. Like, these other... So, actually...
He might be in WIPSEC.
WIPSEC?
Witness Protection.
Oh, Witness Protection.
I learned that from Law & Order SVU.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so... The most contact with the KKK was pretty much all over the phone, because Chuck wasn't always available. He was also working other investigations at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is, I think, is a big reason why they would not want his actual identity out.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
This wasn't his only case.
Yeah. So he was doing other undercover shit?
Mm-hmm.
I would get those characters mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a really specific type of person to be an undercover police officer, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, so he mm-hmm. really was really good at his job.
Must have been, yeah. There was at least one occasion that Ron or Chuck wasn't able to answer the phone, so another officer had to take the call.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Could you imagine being that officer being like, oh, fuck, I'm fucking up.
So, a few words about the KKK from Ron. This is the quote from him. The people I was dealing with were not, to use an old adage, the brightest bulbs in the socket, wrote Stallworth in his memoir, examining that the members of the Colorado Springs KKK mostly did not pick up on Stallworth's mistakes, or the fact that Ron spoke over the phone and in person with completely different voices. So there was only once he was challenged about the difference in his voice. He was like, "You sound different. What's the matter?" And he coughed a couple times and said it was a sinus infection. And he was like, "Oh, I get those all the time. Here's what you need to take care of that."
That's awesome.
So Felix was not the real name. It was Ken O'Dell. Let's see here. So
what about Ivanhoe?
Yeah, was he?
I don't think he was mentioned.
Modeled after a real person.
Mm-hmm. So here's another quote from him. "As undercover investigators, we would never have challenged Ken, the local organizer, who was, I can't stress this enough, a total idiot."
Oh, that's a direct quote?
Yes.
I love that.
It says, in fact, it almost seems as though the Black Klansmen screenwriters upped the KKK's member... the KKK members' collective IQ to create some narrative tension in the film.
Oh, God.
In real life, according to Stallworth, there were no members who remotely were suspicious of him.
Oh, my gosh.
There was no lie detector test, and no bricks being thrown through windows, and no homemade bombs stuffed
nobody
into
asked
a housewife's
to see his penis.
Purse.
Your penis circumstanced.
Right. None of that happened.
That might be a direct quote.
It might be, actually.
You like, know. That might have been like something he heard someone say, be like, "I heard those Jews have their penises circumstanced."
David Duke and Ron Stallworth really did hit it off right away.
Oh, okay.
Really?
They, wow. Yeah. They talked about twice a week.
Really?
Yeah.
I was expecting... I wasn't going to be surprised if you were going to say, like, twice a day. Because it seemed like David Duke really liked Ron.
Oh, yeah. He did.
Yeah. Well, evidently that was pretty accurate. In their chats, David Duke would boast about his plans and feed him info. Like, they would talk about light stuff, like wife and kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He said, let's see, "As a matter of fact, when you took away the topic of white supremacy and KKK nonsense from the discord with Duke, he was a very pleasant conversationalist."
Wow. Well, all right.
So Ron really did communicate with David Duke on behalf of other agencies who couldn't.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm sure there were some for real, like, under the bridge exchanges.
Yeah.
Sergeant Trapp, in real life, died in 1981 of leukemia.
Aww.
Ron said that it was good to see him on screen and to hear his name spoken. It was like a rebirth for him. So I thought that was nice.
That's sweet.
Ron joined forces with the Anti-Defamation League. He really did give up information on those two, quote, classified army guys.
Ooh.
They were actually two members of NORAD, which is the North American Aerospace Defense Command.
Oh, I was wondering, because wow. He said that in the movie. And I'm like, oh,
uh-huh. They had top clearance.
Of course.
Uh-huh. And after information about them was given, they were reassigned to remote locations.
But they still have jobs?
Evidently.
That's
with their security clearance?
Well, can they fire you with top security clearance after you have all that?
I feel like they can take it away.
Yeah, they can keep you
like,
there.
They can take away that information, but they want to keep tabs on you, I think. Brush them under the rug, essentially.
Yeah.
There was actually no bomb attack. But in another article, I read that the talk of attempts to bomb gay bars was real rough. In real life, the police department wouldn't pay for the ceremony robes. So he did the ceremony without them.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. He's like, I'm not buying that shit.
Yeah.
Fucking inflation.
So Ron really was the security for David Duke because there were real death threats. Yeah, David Duke didn't recognize his voice at all. The Polaroid scene was pretty much exact. So Ron called David Duke after his visit to Colorado Springs and asked him if anything like surprised him about the visit. And Ron almost lost it when David Duke just went off about the N-word cop that threatened to arrest him.
Oh my God.
So Ron believes that the real life version of this, why the chief shut down the investigation, was because Ron was getting so involved that they really were recommending him as a leader.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, we have to destroy this evidence. And Ron thinks that it really was because the chief was afraid of a PR nightmare.
That makes sense.
Like, that they're working with the KKK.
Okay. I see what you mean.
Yeah. So, yeah, there were a few things where Ron was like, yeah, they Hollywooded it, mm-hmm. you know. He said, let's see, I got this quote that says, I hope they recognize that racism is alive and well, that the Klan has never gone. It's always been around and will continue to be around, and that you shouldn't focus on just a group called the Klan. It's the whole white supremacist movement, no matter what they call themselves, be it Klan, Nazis, alt-right, skinheads. The basic ideology is the same. They consider themselves superior to others because of their white skin, and we should not sleep on that. I also would like them to take away the fact that Donald Trump is the de facto leader of the white supremacist movement right now, because he gives them a wink and a nod and basically allows them to say the things that they're saying and do the things that they're doing, mm-hmm. like in Charlottesville, without condemning them. He added, in his capacity as the Russian-planted occupier of the White House, he should be the moral conscience of this nation, but he is far from that. I also got some stuff from Time magazine. Ron was actually doing two investigations at the same time.
Wow.
He was working with the KKK and also the Progressive Labor Party.
Damn.
I looked up Progressive Labor Party. It is a Marxist-Leninist political party based primarily in the United States. The PLT is an anti-revolutionist community organization. It was established in January of 1962 as the Progressive Labor Movement following a split in the Communist Party USA, adopting its new name at a convention held in the spring of 1965. It was involved in anti-Vietnam War movement of the 1960s and early 1970s. Through its workers' Student Alliance faction of Students for a Democratic Society. So, yeah, I had no idea what the Progressive Labor Party was. clearly, it's not a thing anymore. If it is, well, I'm an idiot. Okay, so I also looked on Wikipedia. He would get information on the protests against each other. So he would inform other police departments in other cities to get them prepped for these rallies. Yeah, David Duke was always so surprised that the cop turnout was so big. Yeah, they couldn't do all the things they wanted to because cops were always there. Okay, there's a couple of different stats that I have seen on how long the investigation was. This one came from supposedly a quote from Ron saying that basically in his entire 7.5 month investigation, no crosses were burned and they prevented 3 cross burnings. In a different article, I read 9 months. I saw those in a couple different, but supposedly this is a actual quote from him. So, and it is true that the Klan was making active recruitment pitches to armed forces. Ron had said that talking to David, he said the problem with David is he can't go very long without talking about race. And the minute he gets on the subject of race, it's like Dr. Jekyll becomes Mr. Hyde and a monster is unleashed in him.
Wow.
Yeah. David Duke actually did serve in the Louisiana House of Representatives from 1989 to 1993. Ron says, I always maintain that... Ron Stallworth says, I always maintain that had I been allowed to talk to the press about this investigation, we probably could have derailed that. We'll never know for sure, but I felt that if the public found out that a black man made a fool of David Duke, his attempts at a political career would have fallen by the wayside. He would not have a lot to answer for. He didn't find out that a black man made a fool of him until 2006. He says, in 2006, when I retired from law enforcement in Utah, where I spent the last 20 years of my career, a local reporter wrote about my career and focused her story on the Klan investigation. Her story went viral, and one of the follow-ups was from Miami Herald columnist Leonard Pitts. In the process of writing a column about me, he contacted David Duke and asked him about the validity of that story. Duke said, it's not true, he's a liar. Pitts said, if he's lying, then why does he have a membership card signed by you? And then Duke changed his answer and says, well, we didn't do anything illegal, so what's the big deal?
What a little bitch.
Yeah.
He'd been had.
Let's see. History versus Hollywood. They had the 9 months thing. So I'm not exactly sure about that. But if you wanted to look up some really good side-by-sides, History versus Hollywood.
I really like that website.
Yeah, they have, like, all of the side-by-sides. It's really cool. It says that, okay, so I don't know how true the History versus Hollywood is because it's saying different things in different articles. It does say that he really did tell a story about his sister dating a black man. Also, it says that he didn't get an answer back from the letter, so he called David Duke directly instead. I don't know about that, though.
Huh. Yeah. I feel like it would be kind of difficult to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. So there was not only Chuck, but there was also another undercover called Jim Undercover. Let's see. Also, David Duke didn't become Grand Wizard until 1974. Kwame Ture didn't change his name until 1978. They never exposed a real cop from being a racist cop, but his book mentions an officer that did shoot and kill a black boy. Wow. And that he was protected by fellow cops.
It's unfortunately unsurprising.
Right. There is a link in Wikipedia. It goes to RoanokeTimes.com and the was used in a Hillary Clinton speech in 1996, referring to Bill's crime bill. The quote is, they are not just gangs of kids anymore. They are often the kinds of kids that are called super predators. No conscience, no empathy. We can talk about why they ended up that way, but first we have to bring them to heel. And that's tons of that was right from the book. Ron Stallworth is impressed with the way that they filmed it and portrayed it. And they said that, oh gosh, what's his name? David Washington? David John Washington.
Yes. John David.
John David Washington. Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
So he said that John David Washington would text and call him regularly.
Yeah, so. I read that after shooting the banquet scene, he called Ron and was like, how did you do that? Like, yeah. That was rough.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, I hope everyone learns things from this movie like I did.
Same.
Let's do something lighthearted, like, I don't know.
Put an Oreo in a burger?
Yeah. Let's do some weird shit.
With an Oreo.
This is dedicated to Nicole, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Nicole, for the recommendation.
Yes.
Damn you, Nicole.
I was going to say, thank you, maybe. Ready?
Okay. Oh, salud.
Salud.
I don't hate it.
This is exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, but, like, I'm mad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take another bite.
Yeah, I'm like, I might actually finish this because I'm a little hungry.
Mm-hmm. Right?
We each have a quarter of a hamburger.
So, yeah, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I can get down. I'd give it like a 6.5 out of 10.
Somewhere between 5 and 7, yeah. Which I guess would be 6.
Good job, Emily. You know your numbers. I'm going to give it a 5.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 5 just because I feel neutral about it. I don't hate it, but I don't love it.
I kind of like it. Give it a try, Oreos and hamburgers. Oh, not yes. bad. I just want to wrap this up by saying Black Lives Matter.
Damn yeah. right.
All right, sign us off, Emily.
Oh, thank you for listening. Please rate and review and subscribe. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Our theme song is written and performed by my husband, Paul. You can follow his band, Pathos and Logos, on Instagram if you like, at pathos.logos. Come follow us on Instagram at inspiredbymoviespod and Twitter at inspiredby_pod. We are on YouTube at inspiredbymovies, the podcast. And we now have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/inspiredbymovies. You can also email us if you have anything neat to say, if you have any constructive criticism, if you have any recommendations for movies, or if you have any recommendations of what you would like us to eat on Oreos and. And you can do all of that at our email address, which is inspiredbythepodcast@gmail.com. And as Courtney's junior high vice principal always says,
make it a great day or not. The choice is yours. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.